The information discussed on this show is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content is for general informational purposes only.
It's Guy's Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show, and this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about what's going on up in LA with some of the fires up there. We're also going to talk about making a career change from the East Coast to the West Coast and a kind of a personal story by my guest, Fritz Coleman, and how he's managed to kind of keep on keeping on over the years with his career as a entertainer, a comedian, a weatherman, podcast host, and so much more. And he's going to be doing a benefit to help the victims of the fires up in LA coming up. So I want to have him on the show just to get a sense as to what his perspective on what's happening up there in LA right now. And the fires as of this day are still going on. And we want to get Fritz's take on that as a consumer, just as a regular citizen. And then we're also going to get into the backstory of Fritz and where he started off and how he got it to LA and how he spent 40 years as a weatherman on NBC before starting his podcast and continuing on his career in comedy. And he does a one-man show. And as part of that one-man show, he's going to be donating the proceeds to the victims of the Los Angeles fires. So I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation. I've been on Fritz's podcast before. It's called Media Path. He does it with his partner, Louise Planeker, and they've been on my show. So it should be a good conversation. So let's get started with Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and I'm delighted to welcome back Fritz Coleman. Let me tell you a little bit about Fritz. He's an actor, comedian, writer. He was a weatherman on NBC in California for many, many years. He's got monthly engagements at the Moreau Forum in North Hollywood, and they've consistently been selling out, and his run at the intimate venue is extending into 2025. Fritz's unassisted residency at the El Portal is the longest running attraction, and tickets to the show are available. And he's going to do a special show for the fires. And we're going to get into that in a moment. But Fritz has accrued a base of devoted fans throughout Southern California for his four decade career, Emmy Award winner as a weatherman and newscaster for NBC, as I mentioned, and his designation as the honorary mayor of Toluca Lake. But he also has careers as an actor, writer, comedian. He's done solo comedy shows before The Reception, It's Me, Dad. And his newest show is called Unassisted Residency. And it gives Fritz a platform to talk about topics which emerge from his current perspective, that of a still vital 70-something. So welcome to the show. Welcome back, Fritz Coleman, to Guys Guys Radio.
Happy to be here, Robert. Always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Thank you for inviting me back.
So we're both in Southern California. So let's start because it is the topic. It's the elephant in the room beyond. So you're in Toluca Lake. Where exactly is that, and are you safe?
Toluca Lake is in the San Fernando Valley between North Hollywood and Burbank. We are not in a high fire area right now, but we are, you know, we're attached to people who have lost their homes because these fires are circling Southern California. So we all know somebody, and it's just a horrible set of circumstances. Very happy to say we're sort of in the flatlands of the San Fernando Valley, away from the foothills and away from the wild vegetation that usually is a problem for fires. So
Now, what happened when the list started? You had mentioned some really devastating winds.
Well, I did the weather for 40 years at NBC. And at the beginning of this first Santa Ana event, which was last Tuesday and Wednesday, I experienced the worst wind I'd ever experienced in my career, which was 85 mile an hour gusts in Toluca Lake. At Burbank Airport, they had 90 mile an hour winds. Up in the Santa Clarita Valley, where my son lives, adjacent to Magic Mountain, they had 100 mile an hour gusts. So it's just, as we've done so many times this year, it's record-breaking, precedent-setting weather experiences, really quite scary.
Now, as a weatherman, what did you make of all of this as you saw this situation kind of unfolding? There was some warnings a few days before, and then kind of the worst case scenario developed. What was your take on it as a weatherman?
Well, I mean, I have to go back to the ongoing argument I've been making. If you need any evidence of climate change, you just need to look around you. And Santa Ana winds are very much a part of the fabric of Southern California, but up until the last 5 or 6 years, they've been very seasonal. And their season is fall. After the hot winter months, then the position of the earth changes against the sun, and it's October, November. These Santa Ana winds, which are these dry, warm, offshore winds, they come from inland, they come from the desert, and they get pushed down in the canyons and passes of the mountain ranges in Southern California, and they're warmed up and dried out, and they speed down to the coast. And I mean, you have these 80 mile an hour winds with almost no moisture in the air, 5 to 10% relative humidity, which is, it doesn't even seem physically possible, but that's what happens. So up until 5 or 6 years ago, they were always seasonal. Now they're going on around the globe, around the clock. And we had this big episode last week, and now we're going to have a period of days up through Thursday or Friday when we have more Santa Ana winds. The normal drill for Santa Ana winds is you'd have a bad episode for maybe 48 hours, then they would go away for a month or so. But now they're consistent and they're ongoing, which is a huge danger to the firefighters. They got a little bit of a handle on these fires over the weekend because they were able to use their air attack. But now these winds just won't go away. They'll be around, they'll be relentless for a week. So, I mean, it's very, very concerning.
Do you think, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but you know more about this than I do because I'm from the East Coast and I'm living out here and I'm like, wow, because I see the containment numbers and it's like, wow, these fires aren't contained. Do you
No.
see them, the challenge this week? And this is the week of today is the 13th when we're recording this, of containment now, or is it as a matter of this could spread, or is this going to get
Well, over the
smaller?
weekend, they started to contain a little bit. I don't know what the exact numbers are today, but they had like 15 to 20% contained in the Pacific Fire. The Eaton Canyon fire up in Altadena was a little bit more. The other peripheral fires, the one north Sylmar and the Kenneth Fire in northwestern San Fernando Valley, they're almost completely contained. But the only reason they even had any containment, they were at zero containment from Wednesday of last week through the weekend, was because they had the winds and they couldn't fly the firefighting aircraft, the tankers that we borrowed from Canada, the water dropping helicopters that they can scoop up water from the reservoirs and from the ocean. They weren't able to fly. And so the reason they were able to make headway over the weekend is because they had the ability to get this aircraft up. If the winds exceed 30 miles an hour up to 70 or 80 miles an hour, they're not going to be able to fly planes. And so it's going to compound the situation. It's going to spread the pre-existing fires and may even start new fires. It's hard to say. So they need to get the work done while before the winds are supposed to pulse back up this afternoon and then be off and on through Thursday or so. So they need to get some work done today.
Wow. And not to get into finger pointing and politics and all of that, because it's really not the time for it. But do you think, in terms of, people on the outside look in it and they say, oh, we hear like the water wasn't sent to Southern California and, the mayor's away and the the planning wasn't in place and all of that, and it kind of
it
seems to
always
fall on
happens.
political lines.
Yeah,
And
it always happens in a natural disaster where there's finger pointing. Remember the hurricane down in the southeast? It was said that FEMA didn't have enough
Katrina.
money and FEMA wasn't where it had to
Okay.
be, and it turned
Oh,
out to be nonsense. It's a really bad time to finger point. If there's finger pointing to be done, if there are mistakes that are going to be learned, it should be after people are done watching their homes burn and their and the peak of the emergency has already happened. I'll tell you what really breaks my heart. I see lots of news outlets placing blame on Governor Newsom and placing blame on local municipalities that there's not enough water. Listen, this is an unprecedented event. This may go down before it's over as the greatest natural disaster in the history of the United States, certainly in the state of California. So you can't prepare for something like that all the time. There will be glitches in the system. You know, we have 5 to 10 million people living in the southwestern part of the United States. We're the fifth largest economy in the world in California. Things are going to happen when they get to this magnitude, and not everything is going to be perfect. But I really resent it, especially some of the other news outlets that are casting aspersions and placing blame and pointing fingers. And somebody on one of the news stations said the United States government should take over running California to make sure this thing is recovered from properly. That's just awful. Well, nobody deals with a fire emergency is better than the state of California. We've been doing it for years. This is just something that couldn't be prepared for because it's the greatest event in our history. So give us a chance to recover from it before you start placing blame.
And you don't think the budget cuts or any of that thing
I
is.
think the budget cuts are absolutely a place that deserves a little blame. Absolutely. And really, you know, it's like city governments all over the United States. Every city government is having money problems. And every city government, although maybe not to the extreme we're having it, has had to cut money for police, for fire, for infrastructure projects. Everybody has these problems because stuff is so expensive. So that will be one area where I think the state of California is going to have to react either with some sort of a bond issue or an increase in taxes. They're going to have to do it because this showed the vulnerabilities of the system in cutting the budget. So you're 100% right there. But as to specific things like where's the water, how come the fire hydrants don't work? Nobody knows that yet. We'll have the answers to that later.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it's a matter, a lot of it with the budgets and all that's priorities. I know as a New Yorker, being out here, I see what they're doing, the congestion pricing now, which is wild.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
well, the subway system, because they've lost ridership, they need to replace their signal system, are ancient, and they need to they're not making enough money. So they need to get the money from somewhere. So they're not getting it from Peter, so they have to get it from Paul. And that means that
Right.
consumers are going to have to, the people who are driving are going to have to fund the shortages for the MTA.
Yeah.
So people
I
who ride
think
the
this is going to
subway,
be in the off-year election in 2
wild.
years. This all of this stuff is going to be a huge issue.
Yeah.
Reinstating a heftier budget for the firefighters. I mean, that'll be an easy sell. That's a no-brainer. But you're 100% right. That is a place where fingers can be pointed, and that's city government. But to the other things, the infrastructure issues about how come there's no water in the hydrants, and are we all out of water? We're not all out of water. All the reservoirs in the southern half of the state are full. But we also have infrastructure issues like the piping, the delivery systems to some of these places are going to have to be looked at. But let's do that when people are done suffering for a minute, you know.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about your show. You have a special show coming up with the proceeds going to help
Yes.
folks out here. Tell us
We
about
do
that.
our show, or we do our monthly show at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood, and we work at the little theater inside the smaller theater called the Marilyn Monroe Forum. And we've been doing it every month for a year, and we've sold out every show. We were off for December because they had another Christmas-oriented show in there. We're back January 26th, and we've decided to donate all of the profits from that show to the Wildfire Recovery Fund, which is part of the community fund here in Southern California, which will help people who are in desperate need of help after this fire. Because, as you know, the insurance system is being overtaxed in California and has been even before this fire. The fires in the northern part of the state had some of the insurance companies unable to write new policies and having to not honor their policies to some people. This is going to make it even worse.
Yes.
So a lot of people who may not have needed it a while ago are going to need help, so we're going to do that. So we're going to give 100% of the profits after we pay the rent at the theater and everything. We're going to give 100% of the profits. It's not
Okay.
going to be a huge amount of money, but people want to be able to do something. They just want to
Exactly.
feel empowered to help, regardless of how big or small it is.
Okay, so my special guest today on Guys Guys Radio is the amazing Fritz Coleman. He also is on MediaPath podcast with his partner Louise Palinger, and they've been doing that for a number of years. I was a guest and on their show, and they've been a guest on my show. So tell us a little bit about this new show, your one-man show, and some of the topics. It's for woke boomers. So you're going to cover things like, let's
Oh
start with
yeah,
Zoom
that's
school.
the podcast. You know, my stage show is completely different than the podcast. The podcast is we just like to have conversations about things that are in the current zeitgeist. You know, for instance, I'll tell you who we had last week. We had Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Sure.
Everybody thinks she was an actor. She's also a really active animal activist and animal advocate. And she does stuff to rescue dogs and has a huge facility here in Southern California. So we talked about that. Many people wonder what she did since she became the scariest person in any movie ever, in The Exorcist. But we had Robert Hilburn on the week before that. Robert wrote he was an awarded rock critic for the LA Times for 40 years. He was the guy that launched Elton John because of the review he did after Elton John's iconic Troubadour performance when he first came to
Right.
America. He also helped to launch Bruce Springsteen's career with a series. So he was a noted guy, and he had a book. So whatever's going on in the current zeitgeist, we like to talk about, and it's just a conversation. We'll have political guests on of either stripe. And it's fun. We have a great time.
Okay, so this show, what are the topics? What's your show focused on, the one man, new
Okay,
one man show?
unassisted living is the name of my stage show, and it's just me for an hour and a half or so talking about the frustrations and the joys and the foibles of people of a certain age. You know, I do this thing that I've been doing for about 30 years of my career, which is what I call a single topic monologue, where I take a topic and then I write a whole show about it. My first one was about parenthood. Then I did one about divorce. Then I did one about the news. Then I did the first one about being old, which is just discovering, oh my God, I'm old. That was called Defying Gravity. And this one, my current one, is about, just all the common aspects of the aging process. And I think people will like this. First of all, there are no politics involved. You're not assaulted by a lot of bad language or anything. And I think comedians at this point in our history, Bob, ha have a real responsibility, and that is just to take people out of their heads, make them forget the darkness of the world today, and have a laugh for an hour and a half. And we do that by just reflecting on common experiences. And so we have a lot of fun doing it.
So getting old, tell us what do you consider yourself old? What
Yes,
is
I do.
old?
I'm
And
76 years old. I feel like I'm 45 years old, and it's astonishing to me how quickly the whole process happens. So during this, we talk about having grandchildren. We talk about surviving being a babysitter for your grandchildren during the pandemic. We talk about the medications. We talk about going to the doctor. All the common experiences in getting old. Everybody does it, and the laughs that come in this show are laughs of familiarity because they're saying, "Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I have
well,
pictures to
let's
prove."
do a little bit now. I mean, I've got a I'm going for a colonoscopy next week. I've done one a couple, years ago, but Have you had that fun
I've had
experience?
several colonoscopies. I have the colonoscopy gold card. I colonoscopies are very interesting. If you've never had one before, you're very afraid. So you'll go to the doctor, you'll go to the hospital, they'll give you a shot of propofol and a Valium, and you'll wake up in what seems like 2 minutes later. And when I went, the doctor, when I came out of it, gave me the thumbs up, and I gave him the thumbs up, and he said, "Would you like to see what we did?" And before I had a chance to say absolutely not, he's showing me a video of my colonoscopy. So I'm still half whacked on Valium and propofol. So to me, this video looked like an underwater camera going through a shipwreck on the Discovery Channel. And I'm saying, what am I looking at there? Is that like a chandelier from the Titanic, doctor? And so it's that everybody has to do that. I talk about going to a urologist for the first time, the thing every man has to do. And all of those common experiences, having to get up five times in the middle of the night, there's not something everybody can relate to in this if you're of a person of a certain age. If you carry a Medicare card, you need to come and see my show.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about what it's been like for you, the aging process. I mean, there's pluses and there's minuses, of course. You
Well, I'll
are
tell you
on
the
the
plus.
clock.
I'll tell you the plus. I worked at NBC for 40 years, very blessed to have this astonishing career, to give my parents a stable home to live in. Broadcasting, it's a very nomadic existence. You can, work at one place for a couple of years and then go somewhere else. To have a 40-year career at one TV station is unheard of. So that was a gift. And when I retired, I was afraid of retirement. Because when my father retired, my father was the classic post-World War II guy where his whole identity was his work. He'd work 12 hours a day. He didn't read books. He didn't go to movies. He would watch Wheel of Fortune and go to bed later. He did that in his yard work, and that was his life. And when he retired, just over time, I watched him implode. He had no quality of life. When he got too old to do his yard work and stuff, he'd sit there on the couch and, have coffee and read the paper and do nothing. And I thought, oh God, I don't want that. Well, when I retired, my life is 180 degrees different than that. I have grandchildren. I'm performing again. I'm doing a lot of nonprofit work. I'm on the board of directors of three nonprofits. I have two grandchildren. My life is so full. I'm having more fun than I did when I worked, and I'm very grateful. So it's not what I expected it to be, but it's fun. I don't feel as old as I am.
What is the difference between being a father and a grandfather? What's your take on that?
Well, you give them back at the end of the day, as they always say. It's not your responsibility. The thing personally that I found good is that you don't take it as seriously as you did when you were a father. You're afraid to make mistakes. I have three kids. You're afraid to make mistakes, and you're afraid, oh, am I doing the right thing? And then you become a grandfather, and you realize only 50% of it matters. Just relax. Love this child. Every child is like a dealing of the cards. All my kids are healthy and wonderful, and they're all 1,000% different than the next one. You just never know. Just love them. It's all about love. And they know that you're there for them. And so it's easier because you don't obsess over it like you did when you were a parent.
Now, when you were a parent, was it easier as you had three, sounds like you had three children. Did you learn anything along the way, or was it everyone was a crapshoot?
No, I just, I'll tell you what was difficult for me, if you want to be serious about that for a moment. I was an only child. I did not have a fabulous relationship with my parents. They weren't warm and fuzzy. My father suffered from alcoholism, and he was disconnected emotionally from me. So my big fear was that I would make similar mistakes with my raising my children. I don't drink. I've been sober for 40 years, but I realized that you don't have to repeat your parents' mistakes. You can just love them and give them a quality of life and give them great memories And I have a much better relationship with my children than I had with my parents because I learned from my parents' mistakes. And they were good people. They were just people who I don't think particularly enjoyed being parents. So I was on my own, you know. So it's interesting. So I learned from my parents' mistakes. And one of the great releases in life is realizing that you don't have to be the same kind of parent your parents were. You know, you're afraid you will be, but you don't have to be.
That's great news. Fritz Coleman, my special guest on Guys Guys Radio. Now, I noticed from the notes that you are a vegan now. Tell us about your path
No, I'm
towards
not a vegan.
veganism.
That's just a topic in my that's a topic in my show.
Okay, so
I am
have
a
you,
carnivore, my friend.
okay, has your diet changed as you've aged, Fritz?
Yes, that's a very good question. How it's changed is I eat less than I used to. I eat less, but my belly gets bigger. I don't know how that happens. You know, it's your metabolism slowing down, so you can eat less, and I exercise. I ride a stationary bike every day. But I still swell up in spots. I wish I could fight that better. But my diet is better. I eat less, and you do everything less. Moderation is the key to everything. And I've always had a cholesterol problem, so I have to watch what I watch. I watch what I eat.
So initially, when you way back, going back, how did you get into broadcasting? Why did you choose broadcasting, and how did you get into weather?
It was all a grand accident. I went to college at Temple University in Philadelphia in what they called the RTF department, radio, television, and film, where anybody that wanted to be in the media went to this department. And then I went in the Navy for 4 years, and I worked for Armed Forces Radio and Television. And I was stationed on a ship on an aircraft carrier in Norfolk, Virginia. And on that ship, I did a radio show, I did the TV news and weather. And so the Navy introduced me to my career in broadcasting. And the beautiful thing about that was I had no experience when I started this in the Navy, but in the Navy, regardless of how badly you suck, you never get fired. You just keep doing the job. And it's a great release to know that you're not getting fired from your first job. So the Navy taught me everything. So when I got out of the Navy, I went into radio for 15 years. And while I was in radio, I started stand-up comedy. I was the host in a jazz club in Buffalo, New York. And part of my responsibilities as a host was to just keep the audience entertained between acts and everything. And I began to write an act for myself, and I got fairly proficient at it. And then I got smitten with doing the stand-up. And I came out here in 1980 to pursue a career in stand-up comedy. In those days, whenever you would see a successful comedian on television, they would always say, "I'll be at the comedy store this weekend." So I figured you must have to go to the comedy store. So I went to the comedy store and I spent 2 years doing open mics there and finally made it on. Then in 1982, my friend that was an anchor man at Channel 4 in Los Angeles brought his boss to see me perform at the comedy store one Friday night. And after the show, and I talked on stage about my career and doing weather for the Navy, but not knowing anything about it. And after the show was over, I went back to meet this guy's boss, and he said to me, "This is a true story. I know it sounds made up, but it's not." He said, "Would you consider coming to Channel 4 to do some vacation relief weather forecasting? I have a main guy who needs some relief. He hasn't had a vacation in a year. I need some help on weekends. Would you consider doing that?" And I said, "You did hear me say that I don't know anything about weather." And he said, "Perfect. There's no weather in California. This will work out great." So I had to audition. The next week I auditioned. I got the weekend utility job. I did that for 2 years. And then I was bumped up to the main weekday weather job when my predecessor left to go to CBS. And I was there 2 weeks shy of my 40th anniversary. So when I tell you I've had an astonishing amount of good luck in my career, it's an understatement. I am so blessed. And the older, it's one thing about getting old, the older I get, the more grateful I become. And I am so grateful.
Oh, that's a great story. So when you were an aspiring comic and at the comedy store, you must have seen some of the great ones who coming through there back in
Yes.
1980, right? Tell us, could you share some of
Well,
that
that
with
was
us,
the era when
Fritz?
that was the place to go. So that was the end of the David Letterman era because he was already on television. But Jay Leno, and Freddie Prinze had passed away. Richard Pryor would prepare for his specials down there. Billy Crystal. The first night I went to the comedy store, When I got to town, I was sleeping on a lady's apartment floor. She let me sleep until I found my own place. And I went down to the Comedy Store. I couldn't wait to be there. I'd never been there before. And on stage that night was Gary Shandling preparing for his first Tonight Show, Jimmy J.J. Walker from Good Times,
Wow.
Billy Crystal doing his astonishing 15 minutes about Muhammad Ali, and a very funny comedian who never made a big splash as a comic, but he should have, in my opinion, maybe as funny as Robin Williams, was Charles Fleischer. He was the voice of Roger Rabbit in that movie. And so these are the guys on stage the first time I went there. And it was so intimidating. I thought, oh my God, what made me ever think I could come out here? I have 10 minutes of material and I'm going to compete with these guys. And I thought, well, I'll just stay here till my money runs out and I'll go home and apologize to my parents for having made a bad mistake. And, I'll move back home. But I stayed here and I got a job in radio doing voiceover work. So I was able to pay for my, pardon me, pay for my life while I was trying to be a comic. And I've just had a wonderful career out here.
Now, as a weatherman, as you mentioned, like there's not a lot of weather in California until, recently,
Not
but
till
it has been
lately.
going on. But standard perception of California, Southern California weather would be, temperate, nice, pretty much all year
Yes.
round. I noticed when I moved out here 6 years ago that there are seasons, and it's a little more subtle, but there are definitely seasons. It's not the same as being in New York
You
City,
are
where you
100% right. And here's the dilemma for a weatherman in California. Yes, the sun's out, but you have, Los Angeles is called the horizontal city. So within LA County and within, every area from Santa Barbara to the Mexican border, your area included, you have what are called microclimates. You have upper and lower deserts. You have northern and southern mountains. You have coastal and intermediate valleys. You have nine microclimates. And everybody that lives in one of those microclimates wants to know what the weather is for their area. They don't care
Exactly.
what it's like in Santa Barbara. Those are rich people. Who cares about Santa Barbara? Please just tell me about the weather in Culver City, because that's where I work and drive. So you have to sort of paint the weather in a broad brush, but be specific enough where you're giving people the information they need to know. So, yes, the weather is mild compared to North Dakota, but people still need to know what it is in their specific area. So that's your dilemma. And you have to figure out new ways every day to say morning clouds and fog, hazy afternoon sun.
Yeah,
And I did that for 40 years.
amazing. I noticed we were downtown in San Diego when we moved out here, and then we were there through the pandemic, and then we moved up to North County, and I couldn't believe 30 miles the difference in climate. There
Absolutely.
is a def It's much cooler here.
Yeah.
I wore a jean jacket once in 2 years downtown.
San
Now it's like
Diego
every
is
day.
such a beautiful city. Now, for a period of time, like 10 years ago, I did the weather in San Diego too, but I did it from LA. They did this thing to save money called hubbing, which was the smaller markets would use larger market sports and weather guys to deliver the information to their city, and it would save them. They wouldn't have to hire their own weather people, which was a totally misinformed idea because your weather people and your sports people are part of the main identity of your town on TV. So they built me a little tiny studio, and I did the weather for Channel 7 in San Diego, the NBC affiliate, and did it for a couple of years. But I've never been treated as lovely as I was by the audience. San Diego people are fantastic. And it's a beautiful, beautiful part of the United States. People are very lovely. Now it's getting as expensive as LA down there,
Yeah.
but it's a beautiful spot.
What do you notice? And you've been out here a long time. What was the when you first moved out here, what did you notice with the first couple of years of the change in this culture and just behavior? I mean, I've noticed that, for instance, coming from New York to San Diego, that everybody in retail experiences, they want you to have a good time. They want you to have a good meal. They want you come into the store. Hello, and people ask you, what are you doing with the rest of your day? Things like that. I was in New
That's a great
York.
observation.
I get in the elevator, people in my building. I always do the three rule of three. I'd say hello to them 3 times. If I don't get a response, I figured, whatever. But you're not necessarily going to get greeted in New York. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just there's a lot of type A there. Everybody's on a mission. And out here, it's a little
That's a
bit different.
fantastic observation. They're a little more chill out here, as we say.
But it's a little more surfacey too, I noticed, because
Oh
in New
no, that's
York,
true.
they're going to let you
My
know one way or the other.
comedian friend has a great joke, and people are very superficial in California. My friend says, I've been in California 10 years. I have friends I haven't even used yet, which is perfect. It's just different because, you know, out here, not in all, you know, jobs and not all air professions, but you're judged for superficial items. How attractive are you? And how much money do you have? And all the stuff that doesn't really matter. And what you're learning now to bring it back to these fires is that these people are suffering as hard as those of us with a lot less money. And the heartbreak is just as real for them. So it's a great equalizer. So you're right. I agree completely. I came from Philadelphia, which is sort of New York adjacent.
I went to Villanova, so.
Oh my gosh, I love that place. Mm-hmm. I used to go tobogganing right and back. It's a beautiful campus, mm-hmm. great basketball team. I came out here and it took me a while to get used to the number of people. And that's one thing that has really gotten worse. It's so crowded out
it
here.
It is.
And traffic is bad 24 hours a day. One of the bellwether freeways in the United States for bad traffic is the 405, mm-hmm. which goes from the San Fernando Valley down to Santa Monica. It used to be where you could avoid rush hour and not have the headache of a 405. Now it's bad 24 hours a day. And the only time it was good was during the pandemic. It seemed like the apocalypse because there weren't any cars on the road. But now in the middle of the night, you can have a traffic jam on the 405. So there are too many people out here. It's very expensive to live out here. I mean, it is in your county too, North
Sure.
County. Very, very expensive to live out here. And there are criticisms that people have. I don't know anything about business per se, but apparently it's gotten business unfriendly over the last 10 years, the taxing, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of businesses leaving. And so there are things to criticize about it, but it's beautiful weather. And I was here, I've been here for 50 years now, longer than I was in Philadelphia, where I was born and raised, and so I feel like a native. I still love it, but it will test your patience.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that the most challenging things I've had to go through coming out here is learning how to keep up the pace with the driving. I don't mean just on the highway, but just on regular roads all around. People drive, everything's 50 miles an hour and plus, and they'll cut you off from the right lane, from the left lane, just to get to the traffic light,
yes.
just to get to a red light. And if you can't take it personally, you just have to keep up with this, with the crowd.
It's more passive aggressive. In New York, if they're mad at you, they honk their horn.
Right. You don't hear that out here.
They just cut you off and endanger your life. No, you're right. And you know, people take a lot of this aggression out in their, you know, they call it road rage. You know, people take a lot of their aggression out when they're behind the wheel, which is very dangerous.
Now, do you ever get a chance to go back to Philly or the East Coast?
I haven't been there in a long time. The last time I went back, my two older sons, which are now in their mid-30s, who are now in their mid-30s, I took back on their fifth grade class trip to Washington, D.C. And I got permission to take them out of the tour at the end because we were close to Philly. And I said, well, I'll take them to the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall, and it'll be a continuation of the historical trip. So we did that, and I got to go back there and show them where I grew up. And I will tell you, you know, as a young man, maybe you felt this way in New York too, I couldn't wait to get out of there because you just... it's wanderlust. You want to get, as a young man, you want to move away from where you were born and raised. But as an adult, and when I became a parent, I realized what a beautiful place I grew up in. It was lovely. It was safe. People didn't mm-hmm. lock their doors. The school systems were unbelievable. You lived in a rural area, but you were only 30 miles away from a cosmopolitan area, Philadelphia. It was beautiful. I'm sure it's changed, but I have great memories of it.
Kind of the same thing. I grew up in northern New Jersey, and the city was like Oz. So some people, including myself, I wanted to get into the city. So when I got there, my career took off in advertising. I got to travel all around the world working on various products, and it was great home base. But after, I think there was a golden age in New York from about 1980 till about 2010. And then things started to go down. And then when the pandemic hit, I don't think the city has come, in my opinion, because I go back there frequently, has ever really come completely back. But I think what happens is, and I think with LA is different also. I remember in the late 70s coming out here for advertising shoots and so much fun that I had then. And now I don't even, to be honest with you, I'm not thrilled to go up to LA since no. it's just super crowded. It's just driving up there. It's just a headache.
And I'll tell you, when I first came out here and first started getting booked at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, which is not far from where
sure.
you live, I remember I was working in radio then and I was doing both. I'd go down there and come back up. It took me 2 hours and 10 minutes to get from the San Fernando Valley mm-hmm. to La Jolla. Now, 4 or 5 hours to get down there, depending on what the traffic is like on the five. It's completely waterlogged on the getting down there. It's just crazy.
It's just amazing. But listen, you have such great insights and you're fast on your feet. So tell us kind of three bits of advice for those who are turning 70 out there.
Stay active and stay healthy. You know, just take care of yourself. Do a little bit of exercise. I used to run. I used to ride a bike. I don't go on the streets anymore because I don't trust myself. But so I ride a stationary bike. And just keep your mind working. Read and stay active with your circle of friends. Friendships are very important. When you get to a certain age, particularly, I haven't lost a spouse, I'm divorced, but there are people that lose a spouse and they lose their circle of friends and their lives get very small. I think that's dangerous. I think it's important to stay active in your circle of friends and use your mind and just enjoy it.
Fantastic. Fritz Coleman, amazing. Thank you for being back on Guys, Guys Radio. Terrific show, terrific work. Fritz, you're the best. Anytime you want to come back
Robert,
on Guys, Guys Radio.
Back, my friend, I'm glad you're safe and enjoy it down there.
You too. God bless.
See you later.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, another fantastic conversation with our special guest today, Fritz Coleman, a true Renaissance man and an entertainer in LA, 40 years as a weatherman on NBC. He's been doing his podcast for years now. It's called Media Path with his partner, Louise Planicker. I've been on their show, they've been on my show, and Fritz is doing this benefit for the victims of the fires, so I wanted to support him by having him on the show. The name of his one-man show, the current one, is called Unassisted Residency, and again, it's at one of the rooms at El Portal, and it's one of the longest-running attractions that they've had there up in L.A., and he lives in Toluca Lake. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but you Angelinos will be more familiar with it than I am. But in the show, he covers a lot of stuff about, being a 75-year-old man. He covers Zoom school, retirement, becoming vegan, although as Fritz mentioned, he's anything but a vegan, pharmaceuticals, celebrating growing up and growing old. And it's got a lot of his favorite stories and observations about modern life. So what did we learn today? I think we learned, I sense that everybody who has a perspective about these fires, and everybody does, it's like, it seems to be, unfortunately, like every other issue that we are confronted with in our culture, there's some type of, we all want the fires to stop. We all want to protect the victims and the potential victims. And there's always going to be this finger pointing and name calling from both sides. Fritz mentioned climate change, and a lot of folks have taken that mantle and said, this is about climate change. Other folks have said it's about not really doing proper forestry, budget cuts. Maybe the mayor might have rejiggled her schedule to be available a little sooner in LA. But the bottom line is people are hurting. Regular people like you and I are hurting with these fires, and we have to do what we can to support them. So if you can look around, there's a lot of different outlets, it seems, where we can donate goods to the victims and try to help them, because there's a lot of displaced people. I know a friend of mine, his his sister-in-law and their family, Pacific Palisades. Their house is gone. I think they're staying with some friends in Laguna area, but you know, their home is gone. And what do you do? And they've got kids. I think two of them are 10 and under. And like, what do? You're out of school. And what happens to the schools up in LA? I don't think a lot of us really have taken the time to process the pain that this has caused and how long it's going to take to get past this and to rebuild. And is it going to be the same thing? Because there's a lot of politicalization about what's the perspective as to what's the going forward plan. Is it just to replace these homes? It's going to be something different. Who knows? Conspiracy theories galore, as always. And we don't do a lot of politics here on Guys Guys Radio. And that's for a reason, because there's enough of that out there. And you can hear every different perspective on everything on all the other outlets, whether it's mass media or some of the podcasts. What I try to do is bring experts and people with information and insights to you, and you can determine what you feel is correct. And so I don't take sides too much here on Guys Guys Radio, because I want to respect you, the listener and viewers, because my job is to really bring you information and you make the determination as to what fits into your lifestyle, what fits into your life, what fits into your perspective. And that's how we roll here on Guys Guys Radio. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.